Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Big Footy Tiger Cast. Round zero is upon us. It still sounds stupid. Starting this week, the season kicks off. It's actually crept up a little bit, but good to have the real footy back. Enough of the practice match stuff. So good to get stuck into it. Grok, welcome, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, going well. No nap tonight, so I'm ready to go. No. Hopefully no blunders tonight like the Dan Baker thing last week.
Yeah, that was a good one. And what was the other one? It was Gibkiss ACL.
Gibkiss ACL. Yeah. Absolutely.
Couple of good ones in there. Nah, it's good to have you on, mate. And EJ, welcome, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, going great. Going great. And really looking forward to it. I cannot believe that the first game is in 3 nights' time.
I know. It's hard to believe, isn't it? It's very.
It is. And I'm so happy because there's been so much dribble for weeks and weeks and weeks in the media. And finally, we can just watch. And I've done a pretty good job of blocking it out this year, but I just want to watch footy. I just don't care about the media. I just want to watch footy.
6 months in between. It's hard to believe how quick those 6 months have gone.
Is it just me, or has there not been a lot of hype leading up to this round zero? I'm talking maybe more from the AFL media perspective, maybe. I just feel like it's just rolling around very casually, despite the efforts they went to try and take this portion of Sydney away from the NRL. I don't think I've really seen or heard much.
Well, I think the NRL, as much as they overhyped it, and it was ridiculous getting excited about a half-full stadium in Las Vegas, but they did a good job of making everyone know that they were over there and we're sitting here and we've heard nothing. You know?
Yeah. There's been no fanfare at all, no advertising or anything. And considering it was such a big deal at the time, you'd think they'd start, you know, pumping it up a bit more a couple of weeks out.
Well, there we go. It's been advertised a bit up here in Queensland. That's interesting, Ben. I suppose as well, there's probably been a few other big headlines that have maybe taken the limelight away from the season commencing potentially as well. But a big shout out to everyone who's tuning in tonight. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to existing listeners and new listeners alike. Make sure whatever you're listening to us on, give it a like and a share, whether it's on Facebook or Twitter, YouTube. Make sure we sub on YouTube as well. We're trying to crack 900, even 1,000 by the end of the year would be good. But I want to give, obviously there's no CB tonight. He's got quite a bit of cricketing stuff on as that sort of winds up. He's probably going to be touch and go for the next 3 weeks. I think you mentioned EJ. And Tiggs obviously isn't here as well, but I did speak to Tiggs today and I did want to provide an update on him because I know a lot of people will ask. So Tiggs, he said he's doing well, but the effects of the concussion are still prevalent and his focus and energy needs to be on the recovery process. I feel like I'm reading some official bloody prime ministerial statement. We obviously look forward to having him back on once he's feeling up to it again. So like we've always said, the entire time his health and well-being is paramount before any show, anything else. But I'm sure if tidbits of info come through, I'm sure you'll shoot off a cheeky text and we can run with it on the show. But he's just got to go through, you know, a secondary bit of a rehab phase to get himself right before he comes back on. But he has been assured, as will all of you, that the moment he's right to go, he will be back. So make sure if you do follow him on Twitter, OnlyFans, whatever you follow him on, make sure you show him some love. Send him a few messages, send him a DM, tag him, let him know that you're thinking of him because he does miss everybody and he does love the support. So shout out to Tiggs if you are listening, mate. All right, before we get stuck into the Tiger stuff, because there's obviously a few bits and pieces to get through, I think the elephant in the room that we need to speak about, even though it's not Richmond related, is the massive and unnecessary hit from Jimmy Webster on Jai Simkin in the North Melbourne St Kilda match on the weekend. Firstly, we obviously all hope that Jai Simpkin's okay because that was nasty. And there was just, it doesn't matter what game you're in, whether it's pre-season, grand final, whatever it might be, that was completely unnecessary. And it's going to be fascinating to see what the tribunal do with this. Obviously, Power Pepper last week got 4 weeks, Grok. And I think the starting point for this one's 6.
Yeah, I think they'll ask for 5. They'll settle on 6. I reckon. I think, like the AFL are trying to push for the harsher sentences, and I definitely think it'd be 6. It's just a ridiculous brain fade. And as bad as that was, the reaction to it from his family members in the comments on, you know, stuff like that. That's just pouring salt onto a wound. It's not needed, and it's just it makes you think how remorseful he actually was when you see his family members going on like that, saying night-night and things like that. It's, yeah, again, after the Brayshaw incident, we've had, you know, the coronial inquest, Shane Tark, everything like that over the past 2 years. You've got the lawsuit for AFL players with the CTE and everything right now. It's just a poor look. Powell Pepper last week, like, it's just an absolute brain fade, and he deserves to go for his stupidity.
Brock made an interesting point, EJ, when you compare that. You got the Cozzy Pickett incident last year, which we all know got 2 weeks.
Yeah.
How do you see those two compared? That's
one of the points I wanted to bring up. So Cozzy Pickett only got 2 weeks because Smith got straight up. If Smith was down, right, and stayed down and was hurt and wasn't able to take part in the game, it becomes a 4 to 5 weeker. We have become such an outcome-based suspension system where there used to be, back in the day, and I'm showing my age here, there used to be a charge intent to strike where you could swing and you wouldn't even hit someone and you could be up on a charge, right? Everything, I'm trying to think of his name, Webster. Everything Webster did was wrong. Everything was wrong. And what makes it 100 times worse than the Powell Pepper one was that the ball had gone and he was running at him from meters away, so he had all the time in the world.
That's not split second.
Yeah, so there's no choice involved here. You know, so there's no, you know, so when they say, oh, you know, it was split, and coaching staff did say, oh, it's a split-second game. This isn't split-second. He made a choice to line him up, and then at the end of it all, he left the ground to do it.
If it was split-second, I would have assumed he would have had his arms out to try and smother the ball first, and then there was contact. That's not what happened. That can't be right. Have they seriously graded that careless?
Yes, that was the next point. What does it take for something to be graded intention?
It can't not be. I put a TikTok out today about this, comparing this incident to the Pickett one, and both of them were as intentional as each other. And like you said, EJ, the only difference is Pickett got very lucky that Bailey Smith got up. But for me, the intent needs to be the baseline of the punishment. So both of those should start off at 4 weeks because of the intent to hurt. There was no attempt on the ball. It was purely the man.
Then if there's extra damage, you get extra
loading. That's right. Yep. So you add the extra weeks on as loading if there's injury to the player that you've hit. So that way you get the consistency of the deliberate bumps that, you know, are fortunate enough that no one gets hurt, but you can clearly see the intent from both of those acts were the same. They were both trying to take out the person. And to be a little bit more controversial, this is why I don't put Maynard in the same category, because I know this can be argued, but I believe he was trying a football act to smother, intercept, and then there was incidental contact on the way down. To me, that is vastly different to what Webster and Pickett did. Even though the outcomes were the same, the intent was different between that one and those two.
100%. And what never gets talked about, if you look at there's a view from behind Maynard, is when Brayshaw kicks, he then fades away to the right, to his left. If he had have kept running on the same line, the contact wouldn't have been what it was. And once Maynard was in the air, he was nothing he could do about it. In regards to the penalty, I think it'll be 5 or 6, but I'm comfortable in saying that I think the game is moving in a way that in 3 years' time, that'll be 8 to 10.
Yeah,
it's going to be fascinating to see what they come out with.
I don't understand how it's been graded careless. He made a conscious decision. As soon as you make a conscious decision, it has to be intentional. You intended to bump Simpkin. It's as simple as that. The way that they grade intentional is if you intend to actually cause harm. And that's ridiculous, because they only apply intentional to things like striking nowadays. But he obviously intended to make contact.
That's right.
He ran the risk of hitting him high. He knew the consequences. It has to be intentional.
And to Jim's point,
I actually was speaking to CB about this today. I was quite comfortable for Broad to get 4 weeks because it was over the boundary line, and it was a second action, and he did it to cause damage to the player. and he got unlucky with the outcome. You know, that's fair enough. I've got no dramas with it. So this is not a Richmond or a St Kilda thing. This is just
It's the Mansell one. The Mansell one's the one where he actually got the ball.
Were you taking,
a millisecond away from the ball.
Did you bug my phone?
I didn't, but I think all Richmond people are thinking the same thing with that.
He had his hands out to compete until the last second and then took self-preservation action. It was unlucky to get 3 weeks, but that's the way the game's headed. The Broad one was 100% fair enough.
Yep, agree.
And then you've got David King advocating for 10. He wants Stewart to get 10.
I think in 3 years' time it will be 10 weeks.
Yeah.
I do.
I think as bad as it was, I think 10, for me, 10's entering striking zones, like punching people. I'm talking like your Andrew Gaffs, your Barry Hall, like 10 plus. It's hard. I know. It's crazy to think about, isn't it? It's crazy.
The thing is, though, if it is a 10-week, we get to the point where it's a 10-week penalty, people just won't do it.
Yeah, and that's what the ultimate outcome needs to be. Yeah. And we're not saying don't bump in football because there's going to be body-on-body contact, but don't line someone up and fucking run 5 metres and smash him. That's people's health, like livelihoods
at risk.
Yeah, so like we said, hopefully Simpkins okay first and foremost. He makes a good recovery. The tribunal have a chance to set a precedent from the first type of incident of the year. It'll be fascinating to see what they come out with. All right, on to the Richmond stuff. We'll do a very, very quick review of the Collingwood practice game because there's not a lot to take out of those games. It feels like a lifetime ago now, but the first 15 minutes, we actually looked quite sharp, didn't we? The pressure was up, ball movement was good, a bit of slingshot action from the back line. We just couldn't hit the side of a barn door when kicking for goal, and neither could they for periods as well. But, what did you take out of the game? I missed probably two and a bit quarters on my commute home, but all it felt like I missed was a lot more behinds.
If you watched it, Grok, you dig right in because I only got snips.
It's funny. I need to apologise, everyone, because I missed the first 15 minutes and then turned it on.
You missed the best part.
So I am sorry I jinxed it. it was, again, we saw it last year. We've seen it over the last couple of years. Inaccuracy and our goal kicking has been atrocious. And it come back to haunt us. We should have been 4 or 5 goals up at quarter time. We missed some absolute sitters. And, again, you see it in the little – I'm not sure if you see the little competition that the boys are running now with the goal kicking thing. Yeah. And some of the goal kicking from the forwards in the little social media clips are horrendous as well. So I'm not sure what needs to happen there, but it was an interesting game. I thought we matched their midfield pretty well. I thought Thompson Dow had a really good game again. I think he offers something a lot different to what we have. He's actually got that pace and he's clean in space, can find space. He's got a little bit of toe and dash and takes the game on. So even though he is very handball happy, he offers that extra dimension. So I thought he had a decent game. But yeah, all over, I just think the second half, we just got blown off the park. The Pies' kicking skills were really what set them apart. We couldn't hit a target and they smashed us in that area. So yeah, again, it's the kicking skills for me were the big standout. We need to get better at that.
And we obviously had a few of the elder players sit out a lot of the second half too, EJ, must be said. But for me, seeing your boy Gibkiss play another full game or another, you know, three quarters, whatever he played, was a highlight. And I thought Naismith handled himself reasonably well too. I think he is all but penciled himself in.
He's going to be a fantastic story because he's going to play a fair bit of football this year if he stays injury free. So yeah, no, fantastic. In the snippets that I saw, I know I sort of covered it a little bit last week, but it's a bit harder when you're leading out the ball, not being led to the ball, and it might take a few weeks for the synergy to kick. As far as forwards doing the right thing.
So, yeah, I see the comment there. Cozzy was pretty quiet. Yes, he was. He didn't get involved, but he made Darcy Moore accountable. Darcy Moore usually takes double-figure intercept marks against us, frequently. I think I only saw two or three times throughout the course of the match that he actually managed to peel off. So even though he didn't impact, he still made Moore accountable, and that made us a little bit, that made our forward line a little bit better in that we actually had some genuine one-on-ones a lot of the time. But yeah, I think the biggest disappointment for me coming out of that game has been Prestia. I think he just looked so slow, just looked completely out of it. And there was one particular contest on the wing where he stood there, the ball bounced 5 metres in front of him, and he stood and watched instead of going to actually contest it, and just watched, I think it was Noble, just come straight in, run and pick it up rather than competing. And I looked at that and I'm like, as a leader of the club and an experienced player sitting there ball watching and squibbing a contest, essentially, wasn't a poor look, especially as you got younger players like Ross and Dow coming through the midfield. Mm. Yeah, I just think he had an absolute stinker, and he's given me some really big warning signs. I know that he's coming off a couple of injury interrupted years, but at the same time, these are the same warning bells that were ringing for Jack and Koch over the last couple of years as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we're seeing the last of Prestia going around.
Do we want to wait until it's a game for all the chips before we make that call? As far as, yeah, you know, it's the last hit out before pre-season. Is there a little bit of self-preservation there, given his history? And then we look at what happened to Graham in the last quarter. So I'm prepared to, yes, from what I saw, he didn't play well, but I'm prepared to cut him a little slack until I see it a couple of times in the season proper.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough call. There's definitely an element of self-preservation for those older guys, but you'd almost rather him just be taken off and give someone else. Like, I would have rather McCall, if I know he couldn't have played because he did the VFL, but come on and play a full second half or something. G'day, Mick, as well. And I hope the Hammers are treating you well over there. You've been to a few games.
I'm in London still.
Yeah.
Sorry, I won't sing anymore.
A few people have mentioned it about the synergy of the forwards, and that was probably one of the big things that stood out. I think it's a little bit of a combination of a few things, but the main one being that the players playing there are all relatively new, either to that role or to the club, i.e. Bolter, Kaczynski, the small forwards is kind of a bit of a rotation. So I think we could have some frustrating periods where we might get 55, 60 inside 50s, but if we don't get return on those, you know, those entries, it's going to be really frustrating. And that's where, you know, Lynch comes back and it straightens everything up a little bit, hopefully. But you don't want to put all your eggs in that basket either. We kind of need to make it work with how it is too. But I'm still in the Gibkiss forward camp. I think long-term, assuming Gibkiss plays defence, I think it's still going to work okay.
Hang on, you meant Bolter forward.
Yeah, I think Bolter forward, but only if Gibkiss plays back.
Yeah, yeah.
If Gibkiss ends up being out for whatever reason, I think we have to swing him back.
Now, Ben Everill, if you want this to be Pickett's last year in Richmond colours, he has to play every game, mate.
Yeah, we need the under.
We've got to get those boys qualified.
He can miss one if we miss finals.
The other issue we had as well, and I put this out on social media, so I'll read a few comments off there after I get your thoughts and everyone else's thoughts. The one thing that looked most alarming for me, and we saw it last year too, is that we looked very slow through the midfield. Like, it centre bounces. I still don't think we've got that mix right. We've got, if we put Dusty, Prestia, Graham, Taranto, Hopper, any of that combination in there, all as a trio, we're too slow. Like, those guys are very one-paced. Dusty has a little bit of a burst, but he's not like he once was. And I find that the opposition mids can just run it out of the centre pretty easily with no pressure, and then our defenders are at sea. And conversely, we don't get the ball out of the centre quickly at all. So I just want to know, what do people think the makeup of that centre square should be? I think Dow's name has come up quite a bit, which I really, really like. I thought he added quite a bit. I'm not sure if he's overly quick, but he's quicker than the other guys mentioned. And Bolton's the other player as well. My only negative with Bolton being in there is I don't know if he's defensively minded enough to do the chasing the other way if the oppo get the ball out. Offensively, we're laughing. He'll be off to the races. And it must be such a hard act to find a balancing act, but keen to hear what everyone's thoughts are on that, and then I'll read out some comments from the socials.
See, I don't think Bolton playing as a permanent midfielder with his defensive liabilities will be that big of a deal. We set up structurally in the midfield defensively anyway. We want to lock it in first and stop allowing that quick breakaway from the centre. It's what we do. Cochin was perfect at that. He'd set up defensive side of the square and come in and rush the ball carrier if they managed to get the clearance. That was his role. Ross does it. Graham does it now that they're gone. So I don't think Bolton coming in, like, given that the whole actual team structure is defensive, that Shea's going to be exposed. If anything, he's going to give us a weapon offensively, which is what we need. We can't just keep locking it in, trying to win a you know, contested battle against bigger sides. I think we did pretty well against Melbourne, but that's not going to be sustainable for our midfield the whole season. There are going to be times where we're going to have to try and win it ourselves. And I think Bolton in there absolutely does that for us.
Yeah, look, I think our contested numbers in the two games have actually been pretty good. I do think, yes, I agree, it's a bit slow. So not giving away the whole 23, but I've got Dow starting in the guts this week. You know, I think that is the point of difference. And I think I've got Dow starting in the guts and Shea forward, but obviously there's a lot of rotation through. But because I think the plan is, from what it seems, is for Shea to be spending more than 50% of the time forward, but still coming into the guts a few times a quarter. I've been really impressed with Dow, and I think, you know, he's going to provide the point of difference.
Dow has to play most games this year. He absolutely has to. If we're to move forward, he has to play.
And I'll add Sonzi to that when he's over his suspension. You take mute off, Michaels.
How good am I going? I coughed and I put myself on mute. I'll read a few out from Twitter. Thank you, EJ. Brad on Twitter said, with Mank out, he'll have Naismith, Martin, Taranto, Hopper. Melanie said, Taranto, Martin, Dow. Sarge said, Taranto, Dusty, and Dow. There's a lot of Dow love. Old Man Uncle, Taranto, Ross, Bolton. So there seems to be a little bit of a common theme. Darren Miller on Facebook, Martin, Presty, or Bolton, because you've got the goat in there, which is fair enough. Pat O'Callaghan, Presty, or Baker, Taranto, or Martin, Presty, or Dow. Travis Frost, Dion, Dusty, and Tim. That's our A team. So there's a few different ideas in there, but I don't know how popular this view might be. For what it's worth, I don't think it would eventuate anytime soon. But from watching the VFL game and seeing Morris Jr. in the middle at various stages, I'm not saying as a full-blooded midfield, but if he was if he is to get a starting a spot in the 22 at whatever stage that is, him running through the midfield to apply that quick zippy pressure isn't the worst idea. I wouldn't mind seeing how it went. I wouldn't mind seeing him do it more at VFL level first. But just for that extra raw pace could be something to consider. I know a few people put in Dan Rioli as well as someone who's maybe having stints in the midfield. Baker might have more stints in there. He can definitely do that, that zippiness and quick chasing and tackling as well. But I just think ultimately, we're a little bit slow and it's going to undo us again. I just think teams are going to be able to waltz out far too easily. But we'll see how we go. All right, we have MRGs to be possibly, yeah. I wouldn't mind him as a burst player, but he has to earn his spot. I don't want it to be a token gesture. Here's a midfield spot because we need some pace in there. You've got to earn it. I just think his best football is when it's see ball, get ball. Like, he hunts the ball well and he hunts the men with the ball even better. So it could be something to consider down the track, but we'll see. All right, we'll get on to the game for this week. The big round zero clash, it still sounds stupid, playing against the Gold Coast, Saturday the 9th of March at 4:20 p.m. The Dimmer Cup, we're taking on Dimmer or his new toys, as he likes to phrase it. And it's going to be a fascinating game. Both teams, I mean, they lost to GWS in the preseason game by a bit as well. And like I said, you can't take too much out of those games because everyone's trying all sorts of bits and pieces. But I suppose we will have a look at what do we think the sides will look like first. I think EJ, you might have done a 22 or a 23 as it is now.
Yeah. I actually think the last two or three spots are open, and I think we may see I think we might see three debuts. I think we'll definitely see two, possibly three. So we know that Naismith's probably going to get a gig because Nank's not coming up. And I think maybe both small forwards might get a Guernsey. So
which ones both? Who are you going with?
Steely and Seth.
Yes. And when I was looking at the bench, and the cupboard's a little bit bare at the moment with the injuries. So I might even have a wild card in there that I didn't think I'd be putting in a couple of thingos ago. So I've got, you know, Grimes still at the moment in the back line, Young and Gibkiss, Short, Broad, Rioli, K-Mac, Dion, Pickett, Dusty, Bolter, Baker, Campbell, Cozzy and Bolton, Naismith, Dow and Taranto, Hopper, Ross, Vlosten, Green, and one I couldn't fill the last spot. I threw the name Cumberland up there.
Oh, I thought it might have been. As sub.
As that fifth, yeah.
He's not the worst idea as sub. Didn't he have his first game against Gold Coast? Didn't he? When Lynch went off? It was a bit of synergy.
I'm not sure when his first game was. But, yeah, so I think we're missing a few with injuries, but it's still pretty solid. As we said last week, I can't see, and I know I've seen people on the side saying Pickett's got to go, all this sort of, I haven't seen anyone take his spot yet. I think it'll happen this year, but at the moment, K-Mac and Pickett, it's like the Australian cricket team. You've got to take the position off them.
They're still the best performing players in that spot.
Yeah,
as we sit here tonight.
And I implore you, if you get the chance, when you're there live, watch, just spend 10 minutes and just watch K-Mac and watch nothing else. You'll be amazed at the work rate, but also the positioning, and you know, he's setting other people up. It's really fun to watch. I quite often, when I'm at the footy, will just watch different players for a period of time rather than watch the game. Because if something big happens, it's up on the scoreboard anyway.
Yeah.
McIntosh for me is probably in the top five most important players for our structure right now. The way that he patrols the wing, he very rarely loses a one-on-one contest. He halves it at worst. He's still taking the game on as well. So, like, he offers us something that no one else does.
And unlike a lot of players who play wing, he doesn't get sucked in. He holds his structure really, really well.
I think Coulthard was coming back from injury. He did play the VFL game the other week. Who's the other player I was thinking of? Juddy
Clark as well, also,
yeah, Banks had a calf strain, so he didn't play at all last week. Juddy Clark coming off an injury too, but he was looking okay. And to Mick, who asked before about Nank, it hasn't officially been said that he's ruled out, but he's got plantar fasciitis, so he's pretty much going to be week to week for a long time until that clears up. Like, that could, he could feel great, you know, for the next 2 days, and then come game day could flare up and be horrible. Think we'll play it safe with Naismith for this first one, I reckon.
Yeah, Nank mentioned round one is the target, but definitely round two.
Okay, fair enough.
That's the timeline at the moment.
Yeah, so he'll probably be on a huge amount of rest to get up for that one.
Any major differences to that sort of basic 22, 23?
I mean, I would like to see Brown come in. I think he offers us something. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be funny. Obviously, you've got the burnt snags versus the new toys. So I think there's going to be some real spice in this one. Just for that reason, I'd love Cumbo to play myself personally. After some of the sprays that he got from Dimmer publicly and privately, I reckon he'd have a real point to prove. So I wouldn't be against actually starting him and then have someone like Campbell or Green actually be sub. Because I think Steely Green coming on late in the game with his tackle pressure when the game slowed down could be a real X-factor type.
A few people have mentioned Lefau. Is he half a chance to be considered? Not at this early stage?
No, he still needs endurance.
Hugo on the wing. So he probably had the long-term winger written all over him early days, but I'm not sure where he's at, EJ.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I saw a comment before saying, oh, you know, it's Pickett's turnovers and dumb decisions. Well, that's, I think, is what has held Hugo back. I thought Hugo was going to be the answer on the wing. I just think he just needs to get that the four quarter efforts happening. He just seems to go in and out of games. He might be really good for 10 minutes, but then just seems to be, you know, out of position and a couple of yards behind his winger. And that's where we say K-Mac, it's taken him years to get that positioning right. I think K-Mac went back to the VFL to learn it. I think Hugo, much like I was saying with Ross last year, he just seems to get caught out. I still hold high hopes for him because he's got the tank and he's got the speed. He just needs to get that mental consistency.
I think part of Ralph Smith's issue is he was playing as a defensive wingman and he's not defensively minded. He's a very much attack the game sort of thing first and then worry about my opponent second. He's very much so I'll play my game first and worry about my opponent later. And I think quite often he got caught in two minds of what he actually wanted to do. Does he stick with his opponent? Does he push forward? And ultimately, when he had the ball, he'd often turn it over. So I think if he can push that role further up the ground and sort of forward of centre as opposed to backwards of centre, I think that's when that's where he played his best games. Obviously, he had those patches where he's kicking goals from 50. I think he did it against Adelaide, Port, and then St Kilda 3 weeks in a row. So he's pretty solid forward of centre. I just think he's got no defensive-minded mentality at all.
Did you mention Ross as someone playing EJ, or was he left out?
Ross is on my bench. Ross is there? Yes, cool. And more, he got better and better and better on the wing last year because he's a smart player. He doesn't have the speed, and he was getting caught out, but his positioning got improved. And, yeah, I think someone else said, you know, Ross on one wing. I've got no issue if Ross spends time out there at all.
Which is interesting because I know on this show a few times last year we all sort of said he's not a winger. But it was because of those reasons. So if he has improved the positional part of his game, then all of a sudden it becomes an option.
Yeah, his brain is making up for his lack of pace. Yeah, because he's certainly got the tank. He can run all day. He just can't run as fast as some other people.
He has been doing a lot of work with Lambert in regards to the running patterns and everything as an outside runner, which makes sense given the role that he's playing, as Lambert was often that transition player himself. So makes sense.
I think Sonzi's a couple of weeks. I think it's like round two or three is available.
Round three, which is
such a shame because – and look, it was a dumb act what he did, no doubt about it. I feel like he's gotten a big kick up the arse because it seems like he's been working pretty hard this off-season. I'd like to think he'll find himself in the side once he returns. The other one I want to throw up as a potential debut is Kane McAuliffe. And I know he didn't play much in either of our two practice matches, but in the VFL one, he already just seemed like one of those players who looked a little bit above that level. With the way he won the ball, his distribution. I know some of the skills and the turnovers happened, but shit, what Richmond player doesn't do that? So I wouldn't put it past him to get a call up. Maybe not this one, but maybe off the short break against Carlton. Maybe he comes in for someone, if we want to rest someone a little bit older. I'm not sure. Maybe he swaps there for Prestia potentially, if we don't want to risk him off 5 days breaks. But Kane McCallup. There you go. That's good one.
I was thinking McCallup.
Yeah. I don't think he'll play round zero, but I think he will debut very, very early.
I think he will too. JP Vlosten missed with, was it soreness? I haven't seen an official thing, but I think it was more a precautionary miss for that Prakki game against the Pies. I haven't seen anything else to suggest he won't play, But that's not to say that that we're wrong. But yes, hopefully he gets up because he is pivotal to our back line. All right, so with that in mind, where's the game going to be won and lost against the Gold Coast Suns? For me, one of the big points I've got down here is do we have the midfield leg speed to keep up with the Suns? Obviously, Tuke Miller is an absolute jet and will torch a lot of people out the middle. But can we match it with them? Jared Witts, good ruckman. I'm actually, and this is no disrespect to Nank, but I actually think Naismith is a better matchup for Witts than what Nank is anyway, from an actual height and rucking perspective. So, yeah, I'm actually, I think we've got a small W there, a small win.
Yeah, I think our forward matchup versus their defenders is better than their forward matchup versus our defenders. That's where I think it'll be won and lost. I think we've got a slight edge at either end. So even if they do end up with a slight edge in the middle, I think overall our coverage at both ends of the ground should be enough. And I'm actually, the one thing I am insulted by was the price we were at.
What are we at? Is it, it was $2 or $3, wasn't it?
We were nearly $3. I think we're into about $2.50 now. But yeah, I mean, what have Gold Coast ever done? Seriously. So for them to be, they were $1.40 at one stage. I think they're about $1.52 now or something like that. They were $1.40 against us. That is actually insulting.
They do tend to look good early on in seasons.
Their record against us, particularly up there, it's especially coming in first game of the season, I reckon there's a chance that they jump us. I wouldn't be surprised. So those odds those odds don't actually surprise me all that much.
Yes, there you go. It's Dim's fault. We'll be right. Dim and coach sides losing to Gold Coast after Siren. So debutante Steely Green has come on as the sub in the 12-minute mark of the last quarter. Gets high contact on a 45-degree angle and slots it after the Siren to win the game.
I would actually go LaFau. So we get an NRL background. We get one back on the Carmichael Hunt. I would have him kick the goal after the Siren if I had to pick one.
But you're joking, aren't you, EJ? A Richmond player getting a high free kick. We don't have him.
Well, yes, I can explain that because it's Brandon Ellis is going to be the one that gives away the free kick because the umpires still haven't got used to him playing for Gold Coast.
It's the ultimate confusion.
But I watched the Gold Coast and GWS game for probably two-thirds of it. The one thing I will say is it's very much a dimmer game plan at Gold Coast.
Is it chaos ball?
Yep. It's run it, play on at all costs, you know, scrappy balls in, things like that. And they got absolutely torn apart by GWS playing that short chip possession game plan, just the 25, 30-meter kicks upfield, uncontested sort of thing. So, again, we know what to expect from a dimmer game plan. So surely we should be making the plans and knowing that if we can switch to a man on man and not allow them, you know, that space and everything, that we should be able to beat it. So again, we shouldn't be beaten by what we know. This is the perfect case of it.
Love it.
Well,
if you say they got torn apart by kicking, well, isn't that what Uze is trying to implement?
Yep, and that's why I laughed when I saw the game plan.
Yep.
The million-dollar question for me, though, is can we make the forward line dangerous enough to actually kick a score? Like I said before, I think we'll undoubtedly get the 450 entries because that's just it's kind of part and parcel of football. But are we going to be able to be dangerous enough with their defenders on our forwards to kick a reasonable score without Lynch?
Yes.
It's like, has Bolter learnt enough in this short period of time to lead from the front and really cause some issues? I hope he has. I still think long-term he's going to stay there. But it's the short-term part that has me a little bit worried.
Campbell Baker, Dusty Bolton at the feet of the two big forwards.
That's what I was just saying. Like, I don't I don't expect much out of Bolter or Collins other than to keep their man accountable. Keep Collins and keep Ballard accountable. Don't allow them to go third man up. Let the other play, the smaller players do the work at ground level. Hit up those short leads as needed. Like, that's all we need Cozzy to do. Do what he did against Darcy Moore. Keep him accountable. Don't let him get that run and jump. Like, yeah.
Just that's a good point. That's a good point from Paul. Twilight on the Gold Coast. We want to be leading halfway through the third quarter. It gets really tough at the end of games up there in that time slot.
50% chance of rain as well from Richo. Yeah, that makes it interesting. It does become a bit of a bar of soap, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We'll have a look at some matchups quickly before we finish up. Now, the one name that stood out to me from their practice game against GWS was Jack Lukosius popped up and kicked four goals. And he's one who I know has played a little bit of time down back, but Dimmer seems to like the idea of playing him up forward, which is where he was as a junior, I'm pretty sure, from memory. So who would you have going to... Well, we'll go with both of them at the same time. Jack Lukosius and Ben King. Who would you have going to who? Obviously, Tyler Young's probably going to get one and Gibkiss the other, potentially, or maybe you let Broad take one so Gibkiss can roam free a bit.
Oh, I'd have Broad, Lukosius and Young on King because they've also got Mac Andrew, who's quite athletic, and I think that's a good Gibkiss fit.
Has he been playing forward, has he, Mac Andrew? That's interesting.
Yeah, he's playing as a ruck and drifting forward.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and he's also young, so he's not, like Gibkiss, hasn't quite got the fully jacked adult sort of body. There's a couple of years of development to go in Mac Andrew, so that's probably another reason why it probably suits Gibkiss as well. And Mac Andrew isn't as smart, so it also gives the opportunity for Gibkiss to peel off when required.
Okay. Grok, any other alternate thoughts to that, or does that seem the most logical?
Yeah, I agree. That seems the most logical. The only, like, again, like Gibkiss, like, Young's going to take King. He has to.
Yep.
With Lukosius, it's, yeah, Broad or Gibkiss. Those two will be the matchup for him. I think Lukosius is a bit too athletic for Young. As much as Young's solid in that area, Lukosius on elites is very good. So Casbolt probably won't play.
Yeah,
no, he won't play unless. Heavy. Yeah, he won't play unless one of King or Andrew's injured, pretty much.
Okay, makes sense. Like if you're Gold Coast, you're wanting more games into Mac Andrews, undoubtedly before Casbolt. So that makes sense. From a Richmond perspective, so we've got Bolter up forward. Who do you think is going to be the likely matchup for him? And who is Daniel Rioli going to try and run off? Who's he going to make accountable?
Ainsworth. Rioli will be on Ainsworth, I reckon. Ainsworth is very much like a attacking type player, wants to hit the scoreboard. So I think he runs forward of the contest, so Rioli can expose him the other way. And Bolter, it's got to be Collins from them. I think Collins has got the strength to compete with Bolter in a one-on-one thing. So I think Ballard might get exposed in that wrestling battle with Bolter, and he'd be much more likely to go to Cozzy, who's got that bit more athleticism and is that lead-up type player. So
that'll be the matchup. This is very interesting because there's going to be fullbacks that have similar or more strength than Bolter, but then do they have the athleticism to go with him if he gets on the move? If we can hit the target, that's probably the other part of that equation. We have to hit him on the lead. But, yeah, that's why he's a fascinating matchup, EJ.
Yeah, oh, look, I reckon Bolter's pretty bloody strong. I mean,
he is, yeah.
Down back, he's wrestling with Hawkins, and Hawkins throws people around for fun.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's that athleticism off the wrestle that is going to really scare the shit out of defenders, even if he is running the wrong bloody pattern because he hasn't worked it out yet. But no, it's that mix of strength and just power, and just because he's actually quite quick off the mark.
Yeah, as well. Absolutely. Well, so, we saw that with his closing speed on various spoils when he was defending.
Yeah,
that he's got tremendous bursts of speed.
And who's going
to... Chris... Oh, wrong one. I've got the wrong one again. Richo, the best one I wanted. should give Crispy Ford bolter defense. I think I wouldn't be shocked, not this week, but I wouldn't be shocked during the season if at various stages we see them swap to mix it up. That won't surprise me.
Yeah.
I think we'll see how this year plays out with Bolter, because Gibkiss is young enough to learn up forward a lot quicker than what Bolter has, because Bolter's been down back a lot longer. So it's going to be harder for him to break those defender habits, whereas Gibkiss, obviously missing a season and coming into his third, I think it'd be a lot easier for him to pick things up.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about a way to try and say it nicely, but Gibkiss is a smarter footballer than Bolter.
Yeah, that's fair call.
Yeah. Yep.
What can Bolter bench? Jeez. He would go close to the most at the club, I reckon. He'd be pumping serious numbers on the bench.
Absolute beast.
Yeah, he's a machine. All right, let's get some tips, including margin. Send them through in the chat as well. We'll put a few up on the screen.
Before we get into that, we haven't touched on the most important topic.
Which one?
The conspiracy about the umpiring. This is going to be the test. Was it Dimmer's game plan or is it the umpires hate Richmond? We're going to get a definitive answer this week.
It could be nil-nil. They might not know what to do.
Yeah, no free kicks at all.
Well, looking at our pracky game on the weekend, I think I've got a pretty good handle on the answer. Bloody balmy in that bloody spray.
I know.
Never going to get over it.
I know. All right, here we tipping, gents, including margin. Send them through in the chat as well. Tigers by 144. There we go. Keep them coming.
Yeah, I reckon we're going to come out absolutely breathing fire after what happened. And I think we'll win comfortably. I think 34 points. Oof.
Don't mind that.
Do not underestimate the power of a revenge game. I think there is a fair few players that, and I mean, look, it's not really great. It's not really a great way to play every week, but I think there's a fair few players that have put this one down. Tigers by 27.
So is this our grand final? Is this what I'm hearing?
It might be far off it.
I know what you mean. Gold Coast. This would be Gold Coast's grand final.
This one definitely, it does definitely feel a bit more personal for some of the players than any other game they've probably ever played in. So it will be fascinating to see. I mean, we'll never know the answer, but if it's addressed, if it's spoken about, I'm sure between themselves they'll talk about it. But yeah, I reckon we'll get up by, let's say, 17 points, but I'll take any 4 points to start the year, because we need to bank points early, because our first 5 or 6 games are very tricky. And, you know, we could quite easily be 0-5, to be honest, depending on how things play out. So if we can bank one early, that could give us some good confidence heading into the next couple of games.
The one thing I don't want to see, though, is inaccuracy, because that's going to put the pressure on. When we struggle to convert, we turn to water a lot.
Yeah, exactly right. If we leave the door open for teams, like you see how it's going to play out. Like even that Collingwood game, I sat there watching it, and I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. We're going to be 1-7, and before we know it, they'll be 7-1. They'll go down the other end and go bang, 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 and then all of a sudden, what should have been a 30-point lead for us is now a 30-point lead for them. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we go. So hopefully the Tigers have a big one. What time was it? It was 4:20 PM, I think, Melbourne time, Saturday 9th of March against the Gold Coast. Good luck to everyone going to the game. It is a good stadium to watch footy at, and we do have a big supporter base up there.
There's a comment from Jonesy. Have we decided if we're going to do the live call?
I think I'm actually away, as it turns out, but I don't know if I will come back to you guys on that. But we will have to do some live calls during the year, I think. We definitely need to get some done. So, all right, gents, thank you so much for joining tonight. Thank you to everyone for tuning in as well. Make sure you give it a like, share, subscribe, especially on YouTube. Let's pump out those sub numbers. Let's try and crack. I think we're 20 off 900 or 800, sorry. Let's try and get there in the next couple of days. We appreciate all love and support. And again, shout out to Tiggs. Hope you're doing well, mate, and to CB. Hopefully the cricket stuff's going well, and we will see you back shortly. And we'll be back same time next week to hopefully talk about a nice win leading into the official round one. And until next time, guys, go the Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.